Baker didn't like over 200 different things, like the restaurants they would go to and cars they drive in. And I thought it was interesting. Two items got the same exact ranking. Going to church got 8.6, and sleeping got 8.6. So, if you all happen to get drowsy on me this afternoon, I'll take that as a compliment. I won't be too terribly worried about it. All right, looks like everybody's about ready. Get that last cup of coffee. Mr. Watson started things off talking about the armor of God. And I want to continue on talking about the breastplate of righteousness. And I'm going to have to ask you to participate, to be involved in what we talk about, because I will learn if you will help me learn. And just possibly, we might all learn together. Armor of God. Goodness, what in the world is that? And that's spelled A-R-M-O-U-R if you have the King James. If you watch the program, it's A-R-M-O-R. I think we finally got it right. What do you think of when we mention the armor of God? What comes to mind? Tell me what you visualize. A what?
A shield.
A shield. We've got that one gone, so we can't use that. A shield. So you see like a shield for protection. Armor of God. Okay, Mr. Hamm. A battle uniform. Can you describe it for me a little bit?
Well, when you go with the original people that wore the armor, they went in, they quit going for a fight.
Okay.
The other guy couldn't hit him as hard.
Okay. The reason I asked for a definition of the armor, you know, Marines wear a certain outfit, the Army, okay, but in that time, that day and age, what do you visualize when the Apostle Paul was writing about the armor of God? Describe the person wearing the armor of God. What's he got on? Okay, he's protecting his vital parts. And that raises an interesting question. I mean, I am going to leave that alone and proceed along. Okay. Was the armor made out of leather? Was it made out of brass? Was it made out of
metal?
Made out of metal. Okay. I was going to ask you, maybe this will help us a little bit. I made the mistake, and maybe you did it too, this past week, of watching the Ten Commandments again. I don't know. It's sort of irresistible. I don't know why. And of course, who's in the movie? Charlton Heston is Moses. I mean, one of these days when we have a chance to really meet Moses, I'm going to say, well, hello, Charlton. I mean, he is, you know, you just got him in mind as being Moses for some reason. Now, I like to talk about that as a springboard into this armor of God, because in the movie, what do you see? I mean, describe Yul Brynner for me. I mean, beside the fact that he was losing some hair. But what's he wearing in, you know, the chariots? Isn't that what we sometimes visualize in the time of Rome and all these centurions? And they've got sort of like a brass, sort of a preformed brass suit of armor on. They've got a belt around. It's got all that little apparatus on it, a place where you can put extra weapons and things like that. By the way, about this movie, The Ten Commandments, would some of you tell me what you remember most about that movie? Think about it for a moment. What do you remember? Is that what you all remember, is parting of the Red Sea? Moses didn't get to go in the Promised Land. All right. Yeah, okay. All right. Okay. All right. Okay, now Theresa says she remembers the breaking of the Ten Commandments. The tablets were written from the finger of God. How many of you have seen the movie recently? Maybe I'm talking to an audience that doesn't watch it anymore. No, you guys are just like me. I mean, you're hooked. One of the things I don't like, I remember lots of all these things that you mentioned. I'd like to mention one part of the movie which I just don't like. Okay? It's that part of the movie. Actually, there's several things I don't like about it, but one of the things that I don't like is when they're all huddled together and the terrible disaster is going on and the children, the firstborn children of Egypt are being destroyed. Remember that scene in the green mist comes floating through there? And before it all started, remember Yul Brynner's wife? Nefertiti goes to meet Moses' wife, and what was her name? Mrs. Moses. just thought I'd keep you sharp there. Goes to meet Mrs. Moses, and there's this scene. Do you remember the scene? She sort of gets that they're talking about, she wants to save Moses' life, remember? And all of a sudden, Mrs. Moses says, well, I want you to know that I lost him when he went searching for his God, and you lost him when he found his God. And I thought, that is the most, I just disgust that. Because if I read the scripture correctly, as we become more and more involved in God's way of life, we should become better or worse husbands? Better. Better or worse wives? In other words, the pretense behind that was, is he got religion, and guess what happened to him? He got weird. Okay? He got religion, and he got weird. I'll tell you the other thing I don't like about this movie, The Ten Commandments, is Moses is getting white-haired so quickly. Have you noticed that? Charlton Heston. And the other thing at the end of the movie, if all of you, and I'll get off this, is just, do you remember the very end of the movie, and he's passing the mantle on to Joshua, and now he's supposed to ascend to the mountain? Remember how he turns? He. And I thought, is that how I'm going to walk with these days? Oh, but anyway, that's the idea of religion. All right, now, I say all that to talk about the fact that we have these visual images of things that are somewhat religious, don't we? Okay, I've asked you to think a little bit about the armor of God. Armor of God, do we put it on or does God put it on for us? How does that happen? Do we put it on or does God put it on for us? Interesting thought. Teresa says he gives it to us. He's the potter. I think Mr. Watson mentioned that, or somebody did, about him being the potter and we're the clay. Come with me to Ephesians chapter 6. I'm going to mention a couple things very quickly, because before I'm through today, I'm going to ask you what you're doing with your breastplate of righteousness. Because I'm assuming you have one. It is a breastplate. No denying the fact that a breastplate was perceived, at least by the Pauline writer, by the Apostle Paul, to be something that would protect the vital parts. Yes. Was there probably something that went over the shoulders and protected the back? What do you think? Yes, probably so. But the part that receives the attention is the front, because most attacks come from where? Comes from a frontal attack. And I like this idea. It's just something I like to perceive a little bit. I like to think that if I'm going forward, that you're behind me protecting my back, and I'll do the same for you. So we can use the strength of the, it's called a panoply, which is a suit of armor as God intends it to, or intends us to use it. But what I'm going to ask you is, what are you doing with this breastplate of righteousness? Now, let's raise another question before we begin reading. Which parts of the body can we lose?
Everything outside the armor.
Everything outside the armor, okay. In other words, we can get along without a finger, without a hand, without an arm, our extremities. We can get along without an ear, a nose. We can lose one eye. Well, we can lose both eyes, actually, can't we? What can't we lose? Okay, yeah, can't lose your heart. Can't lose what else? Can't lose your mind. That's where we come into the helmet of salvation. What else that has to be protected when this armor, this breastplate of armor, is placed over you? Okay, that's symbolic of the truth. But inside of you, you've got your lungs, your access to your liver. Of course, that's back here, and your kidneys are back there. But, you know, all those things can be pierced. In other words, as was already mentioned, the breastplate of righteousness is something that you put over you to give you life in spite of the blows you take. Now, have any of us ever entered into battle? Boy, I'm tired of battle. You know, there are several things we battle against. What are there? There are actually three things we battle against. What are they?
Carnal.
Okay, one is the world. Well, it mentions there, okay, the devil, because that's the principalities and powers. What else? And ourselves. Do you ever battle yourself? What's Romans chapter 8 and verse 7 says, that one we sort of have memorized? The carnal mind is the what against God?
Enemy
against God. It's the enemy of God. Give me an example of that. Can anybody give me an example?
It's like, okay, you're thinking good today, tonight, you think bad. Then you wake up and you think good tomorrow.
Okay. I'll give you an illustration, a couple. Yeah. Jim, how are you doing? Okay. Okay, perfect love casts out fear, Scripture tells us.
Well, if you have too many fears, that's empty against God because you're fearing fear itself, which is...
Okay. Let's talk about this. I want to give you an illustration because this happened to me, battling yourself, because the armor of God is there principally to withstand the wiles of the devil, as is presented here. And it is absolutely correct that as the presentation is, it's military language, and the idea is, as you do, you put on, or you receive to yourself the armor of God, so that you may withstand the blows that are going to come, so you don't have anything fatal happen to you. And the blows do come. But they come in so many ways. They do come from the devil, no doubt about that. But sometimes I just find a major struggle with myself. And I was thinking about that during this week, these days of unleavened bread, that we're supposed to be a little bit more like Christ every single day. I mean, the idea of taking, ingesting some bread. All of us do that. But driving over here this morning, do you know what somebody had the gall to do to me? It happened at a four-way stop. Do you know what happened? He didn't wait his turn. Now, can you believe that? I think it was Vance. I saw him going after his notes. He had his armor on and I had my armor on. Now, the reason this is just a silly little illustration, but you know what? People have killed over things like that.
Oh, yes, they're
now. Haven't they? I mean, come on, haven't they? Hey, how about when you all used to live in California? Remember the gas shortages and there were long gas lines? Just standing in line waiting for gas, people would take out a pistol and kill someone because they were tired of waiting, or they thought what had happened? Somebody cut in front of them. See? And I was thinking about that this morning because I pulled up to this stop and this car pulled up over here and this truck, red truck, I still remember it, he pulled up and then all of a sudden this car turned, he was sequentially, he was supposed to go next, see. And he turned, did his thing, and then I was supposed to go next, but instead, while he had this guy turning left, had me cut off, he decided to take advantage of my inability to move, so he just jumped the gun. I can't wait to see him at that stop again. Now here's the situation. Think about that for a moment, because we do need the armor of God, the breastplate of righteousness. And by the way, Psalm 119, 172 says what about righteousness? What is righteousness? You know that verse? Huh? All thy commandments are righteousness. If you want to defend yourself against whatever may come your way, you be clothed and protected by the laws of God. Because the truth be told, in this situation where an injustice was done against me at a four-way stop, what am I supposed to do? Go get him? No. No, he didn't say that. Stan didn't say that. He said forgive. That's exactly right. And human nature is really a curious thing. Have you ever noticed? Just think about human nature, because I know that you all have it. And I'm going to ask you a loaded question. Does anybody in this room not have human nature? At least we're being honest so far. How about this? Do any of us have carnal human nature? Yeah. No, everybody still with me? Okay, now I'm going to focus in on husbands and wives just a little bit. Of the two of you, who is the most carnal? Fred is. Mr. Ray is. Okay, we got the finger pointed in the right direction over there. I just threw that in there. Now, we all have to wrestle with ourselves, don't we? And the simplest little things can cause us, if we're not careful, to really make a terrible mistake. And that's why we need the armor of God, to withstand the wiles of the devil. But one of the things that I'm convinced about is that when you look at the book of Ephesians, there's a major attempt by the Apostle Paul to explain. And the theme of the book of Ephesians that leads to chapter 6, what is the theme of Ephesians? Anybody know? It was touched on in the sermon today, or was it by Mr. Stinson?
It's about loving life.
Okay, it's about loving life, but it's about something else. What is it about? Okay, let me give you a clue. When you see this phrase, put on, I'll just put, you know, put, boy, that's an ugly color. I don't like that thing. Jeez. Now, somebody probably likes that color, and I'm sorry. That's okay.
Just doesn't show up.
That put on the whole armor. I'll make it like the armor of God program. Armor of God. When you read that phrase or you say it, there's a word in there when I was reading through it, preparing for this, that really got my attention. What gets your attention? Yeah, this word is this one right here. This is the word that got me when I read through this. Yeah, put on the armor of God, all right, but put on the whole armor of God. And I got to thinking about that because I want to establish the theme of Ephesians. And the word whole is found four times in the book of Ephesians. Did you know that? It's found four times. Now, when I talk about something being whole, what does that communicate to you? It's complete. I like that. What else? Anything else? All. I love that. That's certainly good. Let's come to Ephesians 3 and verse 15 for a moment. Notice you see it says, of whom the whole family in heaven and earth is named. That's one place it's mentioned. Chapter 4, verse 16, it says, from whom the whole body fitly joined together and compacted by that which every spirit supplies. There's a concept and the thought. Then we have in chapter 6, verse 11, put on the whole armor. And I do want you to just notice one thing, and Therese has already touched on this. There it says, put on the whole armor of God. But in verse 13 it says, take unto you the whole armor of God. Wonder why that is. I wonder what the difference is. Take unto you the whole armor of God. A little bit of a different expression. We'll find out why in a moment. So in verse 11 and verse 13, we talk about this whole armor of God. Now, the book of Ephesians is about unity. So just get that in your mind. Okay? Take on the whole, this unit, because Mr. Hamm, if you happen to leave off the helmet and you got the rest of the armor on there, guess what can happen to you? Yeah. You can't withstand the blows because somebody will get you on the head and it's all over. All right? So you've got to have on, if you want to be protected, and I think that the church needs to be protected, we need to all have the whole armor of God. How is it in the book of Ephesians that the church was being attacked? Anybody want to take a guess? It's typical, goes on today. How was the wiles of the devil, what was going on in the church in Ephesus? That's exactly correct. I didn't mean to take that off of there. Okay. Take unto you. Okay, they were having doctrinal problems. And they were having what other kind of problems?
They were fighting among themselves.
We'll just put in there, fighting among themselves. And I'll tell you something, there's nothing worse than church members fighting among themselves. It's just distasteful. It's just so unpleasant. Have any of you ever observed a church fight? Have any of you ever been involved in that church fight? Now, what I was thinking about in this example was, I remember years ago, follow me through on this, let's put on the armor of God. This isn't a church that I pastored years ago. There was a lady, a husband and wife, a deacon, and I imagine the woman is a deaconess by now, but they happened to have just a little bit more money in life. And there was a family who lived across the street from them, and they didn't have quite as much money. Both members of the church. Here's what happened. They had a teenage daughter, this couple, and she had outgrown her clothes, all of her clothes, because she just was a growing teenager. They were very, you know, they were nice clothes. I don't know, Dillard's type clothes or Kmart or whatever you like. They were nice clothes. And so this family, without saying anything, boxed up in a nice sized box, ironed, cleaned and ironed all the clothes that they put in there from their teenage daughter, took it across the street and placed it on the front porch, knocked, nobody was home, but they put it on the front porch for this other family. And it created one of the worst church fights I have ever seen in my life. The person who was given the clothes said, What do you think contributed to the fight? Now remember, the carnal mind is the enemy of God, and if we're not careful, we don't have on our armor, and then something like this church fight occurs, and there's a huge breakup in the relationship. What do you think happened? What did the woman who got upset think? Huh? Her dignity in what way?
Pride.
Okay, she thought that, right, we're on the right track. She thought that they were hand-me-downs, didn't she? You think I'm poor, that's the reason why you gave me those clothes. And guess what happened? Boom! It was a big fight. I mean, it went on for weeks. The family stayed home, wouldn't come to church. That individual got on the phone at the church and began to call around and called everyone, you know, created dissension in the church, all over a freely given gift of nice clothes that were given for the right reason. Without malice. All right. So there you can see just, this human nature that we deal with is really something. And yet I think God's law is, if I'm fully protected, guided by, shielded by God's laws, how should I have responded to that gift? Even if I were poor. Be thankful. Now, how come we can't do things like that? Yeah.
The word whole means we don't get to pick and choose.
I like that. That's very good. Ms. Morris said, the word whole means we don't get to pick and choose which armor we wear. We've got to have all of it. We're united. All right? But don't we run into scraps like this all the time? They're really so unfortunate. I love what this story. I just like to illustrate these things because, you see, when I talk about putting on the whole armor of God, there's this symbolism, alliteration, all these things here. But do we practice it? Because remember, as I just stop here, turn back to Ephesians chapter 4 for just a moment. Ephesians chapter 4, I want to notice in particular in verse 22, that you put off concerning the former conduct the old man which is corrupt according to the deceitful lust, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind. You see, when you take unto yourself the complete armor of God, you are supposed to be symbolic of a new creature in Christ. That's Romans 6 language. Well, how do we do it? I mean, how do we do it? You talk to me about how you become a new creature in Christ. You become this renewed person. Let me give you one illustration. If any of you can come up with others, I love this one. Because once you're converted, what's supposed to happen? Okay? You're supposed to have a contrite and a broken heart. But once you're converted, what happens? Yeah, you're supposed to have fruit. Am I correct on that? There's supposed to be some evidence, just like that fig tree, it bears or it doesn't. It puts forth good fruit or very poor fruit, right? Well, this story, Betsy will know who I'm talking about here, is a member of our congregation here, one of the lovely persons in our church here in Tyler. She was baptized at some time ago, and she was telling about the first time she thought she witnessed evidence of conversion. Now, you may not believe what I'm going to tell you, but she convinced me. Here's what it was. She was in a grocery line at the store. Any of you ever been in those? And in a hurry? And she was just confessing. She said that normally, you know, she was always in a hurry, and if anybody butted in front of her, what would she do? Excuse me? What are you doing? And so she tells this story, and big smile on her face, and I mean, just all caught up in it. She said, for some reason, she was at the counter just like we all are, and all of a sudden somebody just jumped in front of her, just butted their way in there, and she said, oh, excuse me, and just said, if you're in a hurry, I understand that. Something like that. And she said that's the first time she realized that she did something different in her life that she wouldn't have done before she was converted. I suggest to you that she's wearing the armor of God. You see, we make this too complicated. We say, well, we can't do this, we can't do this. Yes, Charles, you don't have to be impatient with that guy at the four-way stop. Right? I really don't. Well, I mean, how do we become these individuals that we're supposed to be? Because listen, if I can't deal with a guy at a four-way stop, how in the world am I going to deal with the devil? You know what I'm saying? If you can't deal with your wife, how in the world are you going to deal with the... Someone would say she is, but no, we're not going to explore that. I'm not. You were looking at me. I wasn't looking at you. Yeah. We come to church. We read these scriptures. We take unleavened bread. We ingest Christ. And my question to you, how thick is your armor? How protected are your vitals and your heart, which is really the primary organ that's protected by the breastplate? Really, I think Mr. Hamm mentioned that. It is your heart that's protected. All right. Renew, this. Be renewed in the spirit of your mind, that you put on the new man, which after God is created in righteousness. There it is, after God is created in righteousness and true holiness. Driving to church again today, see, this life is just so full of examples. I was driving along, and a lovely lady in our church who's here today was not going as fast as I thought she should. However, before I realized that she was a member of the church, I was just driving along behind her, and I thought to myself, well, you know what you think when people are driving too slow. I'm not going to tell you everything I thought. And then all of a sudden, I saw it was one of my family. And you know what? It was okay. Now, isn't that something? Isn't that just raw human nature? And yet, as I drove in, after she stopped to make that left-hand turn directly in front of me, as I drove in, it dawned on me that really I ought to consider the whole world my family. Shouldn't I? You never know. And the same patience then, because, you know, really, I was all impatient. Boy, I thought, oh, I want to go to the right lane. I'm going to hurry. I'm going to be at church. And all of a sudden, it was one of our members in the church, and I thought, oh, that's great. And yet, aren't we supposed to be that way all the time? I mean, are we supposed to be selective? I don't think so. We're supposed to be that way toward everyone. Because, you know, the idea behind the armor of God is real simple. And it is a military analogy, and it's that you've got your armor. The armor, the breastplate of righteousness came up. It protected your throat, too. Came up here and protected all the way down to here so that you could withstand the blow. And the idea is, it makes no difference what comes at you once you're fully suited with the armor of God. You don't give up one inch of territory. Not even one inch. You hold your ground until the blows are over, and then you advance. Because, you know, when you are under attack, you are so disoriented sometimes that you don't have time to think about what you're doing. There's so much happening. You ever had an experience like that? I had something like that happen to me just the other day. At my house, I have a little Sheltie dog. Do all of you know what Shelties are? A little miniature collie. She's only about that high. She's a little bit longer than normal. But she decided at the beginning of the Days on Unleavened Bread to have her pups. She had 10, okay, and I happened to stumble into it. I'm illustrating my point to you. When I realized she had all these pups, I was out here, and I'm a father too, you know, so I've been through this. But I looked in there, and I came out there, and here were all these pups. There were 6 pups. It was about only 6, and I thought, well, hey, she's all done. This is great. I missed out on all this action, but she's all right. So I gathered up all these 6 pups, and I ushered her into the home, and I got in there, and then I set up a box, and I found the right place. I thought, well, Betsy, will she be angry about that or upset because it's in the living room and all the pups and all the other stuff that go along with that? Could have put it in her bed, but I thought, no, I don't want to do that. So I get her all set up, get my dog all set up, and guess what she does? she has another pup. And I literally, this is exactly what happened. I did not know what to do. I thought, there are so many things for me to do right now. And I moved this way, and then I moved this way, and I moved this way, and I thought, you silly thing. And I told myself, I said, Charles, make a decision. Make a decision. Because in indecision, I wasn't doing anything. And she was having more pups. She quit with number 10. Number 10 pup. Now, the idea is don't give up any ground, but you sometimes just have to let the dust settle before you know what to do. But make a decision, and you make it because you're wearing the breastplate of righteousness, and all His laws are righteousness. God's 10 commandments. What's commandment number 1? What is it? You commandment keepers, you? What are they now? You that have the breastplate of righteousness on, what's commandment number 1? Don't you turn Exodus 5 on me. Okay, thou shalt have no other gods before me. What's that mean? Don't have any idols. I mean, isn't that what it means? Okay, what's number 2? Are you all reading from the same Bible I am? Or now, what's number 2? No graven images. It's a style of worship. Don't bow down and worship all these things. What's number 3? Nope. That's number 4. What's number 3? Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Number 4. Keep the Sabbath day holy. Number 5. Honor your father and your mother. I've always noticed it doesn't say the mother and dad has to honor the kids, but the kids are supposed to honor their father and mother. Okay. Number 6. Thou shalt do no murder. Number 7, thou shalt not commit adultery. Number 8, thou shalt not steal. Number 9, I want to stop on this thing about stealing for just a moment. Come here with me to Ephesians 4 again. Because notice here about laying aside this old person. And we're talking about some examples of commandments. Wherefore, putting away lying. You know, you're not supposed to bear false witness and lie. Speak every man truth with his neighbor, for we are members one of another. Again, remember the principle here is unity. All right? Be you angry, don't sin, don't let the sun go down upon your wrath, neither give place to the devil. Uh-oh, there he comes again. He's mentioned there. Let him that stole steal no more. Now, I was thinking about that. Answer, true or false, or yes or no? Should we steal? Okay? Why do we? Why do people steal? If it's so clear, listen, this is my Bible. And if it's up here and you don't have a Bible and somebody comes along and steals my Bible, we know it says, thou shalt not steal. So why do people steal, not Bibles, but they steal things, money, possessions, so forth? Why do people do that? Okay, the selfish things they don't have. Let me set it up. Jim? I'm sorry? Covetous. When lust is conceived, it brings forth sin. Sin, when it's finished, brings forth death. They think that they deserve... Now, here's the setting. Let me show you how we rationalize. We rationalize ourselves into disobeying God's laws. We rationalize ourselves into taking off the armor of God because we make it okay. Let me give you an example of that. Is it okay to steal? No. Okay. So... But is it okay to steal from someone who has too much? Okay, all right, here you are, you're hungry. You don't have any food. Your puppies ate it all. But your neighbor does. And they're away, and they've got plenty. And you know they won't miss one loaf of bread tomorrow. So because you begin to rationalize, what do? You make decisions for them, and next thing you know, you take off the armor of God, which says, thou shalt not steal, and people do. We'll rationalize things. Oh, they won't miss it. See how that works? Boy, we rationalize well, don't we? Well, we got to really resist that, because it says, you know, this armor of God, this new man, this new creature in Christ, we can rationalize anger, hostility, bitterness, no end to it. Okay, now let's come back here to Ephesians again, Ephesians 6. I'm sure Mr. Watson is going to be talking about the wiles of the devil. That's part of his presentation later on tomorrow. But notice, put on the whole armor of God. Then in verse 13 it says, take unto you the whole armor of God, that you be able to withstand in the evil day. And there's another word in here that occurs a lot. It occurs four times. It's the word against. And the idea is, in verse 11, you put on the whole armor of God that you can withstand the wiles of the devils. Because this, look, who do we wrestle against? For we wrestle not against flesh and blood. You know, that's tough enough. But that's not who this battle is really with. But against what? Principalities, powers, rulers of the darkness of this world, against the spiritual wickedness in high places. And that's all symbolic of what? Of the devil and his ways and his minions and all of that. And it's unseen. You know, we got to wrestle against that too. So because he says, you know, you put on the whole armor of God, but listen, when you realize what you're wrestling with, you better take unto you the whole armor of God, which means you better receive unto you the whole armor of God, and who will give it to you? God will give it to you. You can go back to Isaiah 57 and you can see a comparison. It talks about, interestingly enough, that Christ, God of the Old Testament, has on a breastplate of righteousness, and he was perfect. It also talks about having a helmet of faith. So where do you get it? Oh, I'm just so good, I just come to me naturally. No. You accept Christ, you obey Christ, you use God's Holy Spirit. And I tell you what, a conclusion. I've concluded that I don't work hard enough, and I don't believe in salvation by works, okay? You know that. I believe in salvation by grace, but I realize I've got to be a commandment keeper as well. I can't work my way into the kingdom of God. Now, Fred?
Would you ask for it? Would you tell them to ask for
it? Ask for what?
Ask for the help.
Sure, ask for the help. You know. Because the idea is, if you've got on the whole armor of God, you can withstand anything. It doesn't mean the blows won't come, but when they come, you will withstand them in that evil day. And some of you in this room may not have experienced too many evil days, but if you haven't, I'm going to guarantee you, and you're not going to like this, they're coming. I think Mr. Watson talked about that as well. They're coming. One of the most evil things that I'm aware of in this society is this matter of divorce, because when husbands and wives get mad at each other, you know what they threaten each other with? You got a double scenario. We were talking about this last night. As a minister and a counselor over many years, I've seen this done. It's just absolutely unbelievable to me. If you take a husband and wife, one's in the church, one's not in the church, and they're having marital difficulties, the one who's not in the church, and again, I realize I'm probably setting this up very poorly, when they are trying to demean and take away from the one in the church, what's some of the things they might say? I realize it depends on what's going on, but they will say, well, you know, you don't cook like my mother. You don't keep a clean house. You don't love me like I want to be loved. Things like that. But it has amazed me that in the church, where we're supposed to have on the armor of God, this breastplate of righteousness, you know what people do? They come out with the greatest blow of all. They say, you're not converted. What about that? That's nasty. Two people baptized, and all of a sudden somebody says, huh, you're not acting like you're converted. Acting like it is different than saying you are. But what a terrible thing to say, as if I've got to be the judge of that. You know, what is it when somebody says that, what does that normally imply? Huh? Okay. A thought, Theresa, that stimulates a thought here, and that is, do you think it's possible to have a counterfeit breastplate of righteousness? Oh, you think so? How come you think that? Because you're right. How could that be? Okay, there's a counterfeit to everything, but give me an example. There's a major example major examples in the scripture of counterfeit, false breastplate of righteousness. Who is it? The Pharisees. You can read about them over in Matthew chapter 23. All right. Saul, that's a good one too. By the way, everything about the Pharisees was not bad. Do you all know that? You all know that, don't you? And by the way, not all the Pharisees were bad. You know that too. But with some of them, they were like vipers, and they were rotten sepulchers, so forth and so on. You might study it sometime in the Talmud, which is a collection of the it's a collection of Jewish writings and the traditions. But they claim that there are seven types of Pharisees. Seven types of Pharisees. One I remember is called Ever Reckoning. An Ever Reckoning Pharisee. R-E-C-K-O-N-I-N-G. You know what he's doing? Ever Reckoning. He's counting up his righteousness. He's always counting his righteousness. Another one was the submissive Pharisee, because he was always bent over double. You know, he was so humble, just walking around like this, so everybody could do what? They could see how good he was, this kind of thing. Oh, there was one called a bruised. I remember this one called a bruised Pharisee. You know why he was bruised? Because he closed his eyes so he couldn't see women, and he kept banging against the walls. That's what it says in there. You know. Now, I bring that up because it is possible to have a counterfeit breastplate of righteousness. Really? See, you understand that. So you've got to, it's self-righteousness, you've got to really be sure that what you're wearing is pleasing to God. Now, it's time for me to close out here, but I do want you to notice in verse 13, it says, "Wherefore take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and stand, and having done all, to stand." Time and time again, this principle of standing. You know, stand firm when the blows come. Having your loins girt about with truth, Mr. Watson talked about that, and having on the breastplate of righteousness. I have found that in my life, and I'm grateful the life is still going on for me, that any time when I am in a quandary, God's laws show me the answer. They really do. If I just think about it, and do like David did, meditate and think upon God's laws, and then when you get it right, it's right where? It's in, right in here. And when it's right, you preserve it and you protect it and you keep it there. I was reading a story. I love this story of a minister who was, he was like a couch potato. You know what a couch potato is? He was a real slob. Why are you all looking at me? That's easy. He was single. He was just a slob. He's like a lot of single men. I don't know if everyone's like that, but single men have a tendency to be a little bit sloppy, I guess. All right. Some of us have been married so long, we don't remember what it was like to be single. But in this case, he was telling about how sloppy he was. He'd come home, as soon as he walked through the door, he'd get his shoes off. You know, he'd be out of his shoes, he'd get his jacket off, and there'd be a trail into his bedroom. You know, clothes, pants, everything. Then he got married. And his wife, who's a lovely lady, said, "I want you to be cleaner, tidier, more kempt." And he said, "Why?" He says, "I'm happy this way." She says, "Because you don't want me unhappy." And he thought about that, and he thought, that makes sense. But it was a trial for him. But over the course of time, guess what he learned to do? In a way, I mean, he applied this principle, God's laws, and he was considerate of his mate. Next thing you know, he was clean. I mean, he was tidy. He'd come home, put his socks where they belong, put his pants where they belong, put his shirt where they belong, and everything was going along just fine. Then one day, his wife went on about a two-week vacation. And you know what he writes about this? He says, "You know what I was looking forward to? Being the old way," he said. "I wanted to be like the old man." And so he said, "I came home that day, and sure enough," he said, "I took my shoes off, I took my jacket off, and I did. I made a big trail in the bathroom." And he says, "And I just left it there till the next morning, and I looked up, and I hadn't seen it like that way for a long time." And he said, "And guess what? Because he had practiced and worked doing it the other way for such a long time, now the old way wasn't any good any longer." So you know what he did? He picked all his clothes up. And when his wife came home, it was just like she'd been there all week long. And what I liked about this is he said that his wife had taught him a more excellent way. A more excellent way, a better way. Now, I'd like to suggest the same to you. If we will put on the breastplate of righteousness and try it, whether it's attitude, emotions, anger, frustration, love, or whatever it might be, and we really work at it and work at it and work at it, because you can have someone jump in front of you in line and not get them. You can come to a four-way stop and not get terribly angry and pull out a gun and shoot someone. You can come home and love your wife without kicking your wife. And I'm not saying anybody does that. But the point is, if you try it, you'll see it works. And I will tell you this. If the armor of God is where it should be and you have taken it upon you, by the way, the armor of God, as it's talked about here in Ephesians 6, is put on, is given to you as you would put it on. You put on, first of all, this belt. Then you put on the breastplate. That's how you... It's in order and sequence. But if you will do that and do it long enough, you know what will happen at the end of time? You'll be protected and you will learn to appreciate a more excellent way. And I'll tell you something. I can't wait. Mr. Watson was talking about this. I can't wait until Jesus Christ comes back and he looks at Stan and he looks at Judy, and I hope I'm there too. Carol, Betsy, Mr. and Mrs. Bull, we love you to death. Theresa, and he looks at all of us, and we are wearing the armor of God, and we have used it, we have practiced with it, we have defended with it, we have advanced with it, and God says, you go with me, and I will show you the high places of the universe. And there won't be a place he'll take us that we won't be glad to go. There's a case to be made for putting on the breastplate of righteousness. Wear it, and wear it well. Okay, let's break. All right. We'll break here and come back in about 5 or 10 minutes or so.